This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal produced by Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for July 21st, 2011. Today we look at a national week of action opposing the South Korea, Colombia, and Panama free trade agreements. Despite earlier indications he would be critical of free trade agreements, President Obama is supporting these three agreements previously negotiated by the Bush administration. And we also talk with the Farnsworth Art Museum in Rockland about their youth program and the film they created on how young people integrate art into their lives to creatively move through difficult times. This week is a national week of action against three new trade agreements looming on the horizon. Before he left office, the George W. Bush administration negotiated free trade deals with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama. A broad base across the U.S. and internationally opposed these type of agreements, pointing to the adverse effects they have had on labor rights, job loss, environmental quality, human rights, consumer and health protections, and on state and national sovereignty. Last week, the Bangor Daily News drew attention to this issue, coming out against the South Korea, Colombia, and Panama free trade deals, saying in part, quote, "If businesses based in developing nations have easy access to the lucrative U.S. consumer market without having to live up to labor, human rights, and environmental standards, the only winners are corporations without borders. The losers are the people who live and work in those developing nations and the American blue-collar workers who see jobs leave the states," end quote. Todd Tucker writes in Foreign Policy, April 18, 2011, quote, "Since NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, went into effect in 1994 and the World Trade Organization, WTO, began its operations a year later, 43,000 American manufacturing establishments have closed. More than 5 million manufacturing jobs have been lost. Median real wages have stagnated, and inequality has skyrocketed to levels not seen since the robber baron age," end quote. The controversial Peru Free Trade Agreement was the last one Congress passed in 2007, amidst massive indigenous protests. We speak now with Beatrice Lopez, the national field organizer for Global Trade Watch, a program of Public Citizen. In his campaign, Obama first gave indication that he would be critical of free trade agreements the U.S. engaged in, but now we hear him including it in his three-pronged approach to strengthen the economy. We want to get into some of the details of the South Korea, Colombia, and Panama free trade agreements in a moment. But first, can you address this paradox? With all the jobs lost connected to free trade agreements and neoliberal policy, how is it that we see Obama pushing the same agendas of the Bush administration and the Clinton administration before that? Do you think it is in part because he has past Clinton administration members close to him? Or what do you make of this position to push through these agreements?
True enough, when Obama started campaigning, he definitely was very critical of these free trade agreements, particularly of NAFTA and Korea and Colombia. He was very critical of all these and didn't like this NAFTA model, which is the North American Free Trade Agreement, because of all the disastrous impacts it had on our country and in Mexico. And he was very critical of all of this. Yet, he comes to office, and we're all hoping the best that he will reverse a lot of this and uphold his campaign commitments, but unfortunately, he does adopt these trade deals with little changes and just keeping intact the NAFTA model. It may be that the influence of his few members in his cabinet or in his administration have influenced him, but he knows what he's dealing with. And now basically he's just upholding this and not looking deeper into the issues that are plaguing these trade deals. And so we do see this paradox, unfortunately, and it is basically up to Congress now to sort of, you know, undo these trade deals and send a message to Obama that he has to stick to his campaign commitments. Those campaign commitments were good. He knew the problems that plagued NAFTA, Korea, and Colombia.
Can you talk about the elements of these trade agreements that correlate or replicate the NAFTA free trade agreement, and then some of the elements specifically in each of these different agreements that are of concern for both the U.S. and for the country's labor and environment in the countries with which the agreements would be made?
Unfortunately, all these three deals are clones of NAFTA. throughout the years, what we saw in NAFTA has been disastrous for working families. Farmers both here in the U.S. and Mexico, it has these outrageous provisions that allow big multinational corporations to skirt our laws and court systems and directly attack our domestic laws if they see those laws as trade violations or as undermining their future expected profits. But what makes Korea Trade Deal, which is, by the way, the biggest deal since NAFTA, the biggest NAFTA-style deal since NAFTA itself, is that, you know, the EPI, which is the Economic Policy Institute, predicts that it'll kill about 159,000 U.S. manufacturing jobs. Then we also see that even the government agency, which is the United States International Trade Commission, which normally reports that all these trade deals are wonderful and dandy, actually reported that this deal will increase our overall trade deficit. So it's going to have a huge impact on our economy.
What areas would be impacted?
Well, in fact, the USTIC identifies seven key losing industrial sectors. These are the auto, including auto parts and electronics, which will almost lose $1 billion each annually, and also iron, metal, apparel, and textiles, as well as transportation equipment. These are all losers in this deal.
And now, I know there's many elements to South Korea, but just to move to Colombia for a moment, and in fact, that the Colombia Free Trade Agreement was something specifically Obama spoke of because of the number of unionists killed in that country every year. Can you talk about that issue of labor in that country in relation to what these free trade policies would allow for the companies that operate in Colombia, and then this action plan and how effective it has or has not been?
Well, unfortunately, as beautiful as the country Colombia is, there's a lot of things that plague Colombia. One of the one that you mentioned, which is, yes, more unions are actually killed every year in Colombia than anywhere in the world. In 2010, we had 51 unions that were assassinated, which is up from 37 the year Bush signed this trade deal. And if we look at it overall, since 1986, we're looking at nearly 2,860 trade unions have been killed. And it's a huge deal, and it's one that originally Obama had identified and said that this is wrong. It was this wrong. Unions are getting killed dearly. And regarding this action plan, so Obama administration, you know, endorses this action plan to try to sort of address some of the issues, but it doesn't address any of the important issues. It doesn't address the issue that none of the perpetrators aren't going to be convicted, aren't going to be prosecuted. It's not going to end the unionist murders. So this action plan does nothing to address these issues, unfortunately. And just when supposedly these benchmarks had been supposedly fulfilled by the Colombian government, you know, just in that month, four unionists were killed, two of them being teachers.
And yet the administration holds up the action plan as the solution to what was wrong with the Colombia Free Trade Agreement?
Yes, yeah. I mean, they hold it up as a success, and yet there are, you know, unions in Colombia and U.S. unions both agree that this action plan is not going to solve the horrific situation occurring in Colombia.
And let's move to Panama real quick, and then we can go on to some more general information about all of them. But can you talk about some of the specific elements that are original to or are of particular concern with the Panama deal?
So Panama is actually, unfortunately, the world's most notorious tax havens. Mm-hmm. And it's also and this is according to the State Department, it's also the main site of drug money laundering by Mexican and Colombian drug kingpins. So, you know, we're associating ourselves with a country that unfortunately has this, you know, these qualities. And there's no advantage for us to have a trade deal with Panama, considering that it's a tax haven. We already see 400,000 corporations are registered there. So basically what we're seeing is that these corporations go there to hide their money, and as well as rich individuals hide their money. And this is actually a huge burden for us here. And it also, the deal also allows for there to be challenge of, sort of empowers these offshore corporations registered in Panama to directly challenge future U.S. anti-tax haven policies and actually demand cash compensation in foreign tribunals. So it's actually a big deal.
And that's one of the main points with all these free trade agreements, is that it gives tools to corporations to be able to challenge countries' laws if they consider them to be a barrier to trade.
Exactly, yes. If they consider it as a trade violation, or if they think it's going to undermine their profits, then they will surely take these countries, as they have, and we've seen in the past, to foreign tribunals, to World Bank and UN tribunals.
And can you talk about the movement within the U.S. and its links internationally, but what kind of stances are being taken with the United States? We know that the labor movement here has been very strong, coming out against free trade agreements, and that, in fact, during the elections, when Obama was elected, there were many, many elected to Congress who had an anti-trade platform. Here in Maine, we have Representative Mike Michoud, who has proposed the Trade Act, which would re-examine current trade agreements and set up a whole other set of standards for any trade agreements that might go forth. Can you talk about the organizing around this issue? And then, of course, tell us about this next week is a national week of action on these three free trade agreements.
There's been, as you mentioned, there's been a great support of unions who have, you know, gathered against these trade deals, all three trade deals. There's been various letters from unions like the AFL-CIO, IBEW, et cetera, who have sent their letters to Congress saying they're opposing these trade deals. So there is a movement, actually. There is a movement throughout the United States, because polling, even while all this campaigning was going on 2 years ago, polling showed that Americans are actually against more of the same sort of failed trade policy that has proven to be disastrous for the United States. So we see this whole movement of folks, you know, at the union level and the environmental level, who are sending their message to Congress and Obama that we won't stand for these trade deals anymore. You know, we can't. And a lot of members of Congress, like you mentioned, Representative Michoud, have stepped up as well and said, you know, this is enough. This is enough. We have three trade deals, one of them being the Korea trade deal, which is going to have a great impact on our economy at a time where we're just barely recovering. So it's kind of nice to see this sort of unit, you know, and we're talking about across demographics. People are against these deals. And it's in a good time, at a crucial time, because these deals will be coming up to vote in Congress at some point this year. We might see it in the fall, or we might even see it earlier, like this month. And so, so we're setting up, we have, our week of action actually has begun this week. Folks across the country are writing op-eds, writing letters to the editors, making phone calls to their representatives, you know, because the decision and where we could best voice our opposition is in Congress. That's where we have to make the difference and make sure that our representatives know that they have to vote against this deal when the vote comes up.
So the week of action is this week?
Yes, this week, although we may be extending it, but yes, this week is the week of action, and folks are already doing many things. Our activists are going to our website, which is www.citizen.org/action week, and that's where we have a series. We provide resources. There's a message board there where they tell us what their what actors are doing in their hometown. The letter to the editors they've written, op-eds, a various amount of sort of actions. Actually, one of our activists in Long Island held a banner across a major highway, and he held the banner, you know, saying vote against the Korea FTA to his representatives. And so those kinds of actions speak thousands of words and make a difference. They do make a difference. And I urge, you know, people to please call their representative, because this is the time. We're at a crucial point in our history where we have to make sure that these FTAs don't continue to ruin our economy and make it harder for working families.
Where do you hear the justification coming from that these trade deals will actually create jobs when there's data showing that jobs will be lost? Where is that push coming from?
Well, that push, unfortunately, is coming from big businesses and the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce pushes these sort of these numbers that really don't make sense. You know, I think in the past, we heard Obama claim that it'll support 70,000 jobs, and which is a figure that only accounts for possible job creation by exports, but ignores the much bigger hit to the U.S. jobs that the official U.S. government study says that this pact will cause on the import side. So it ignores the fact that there's going to be this huge increase of trade deficit. So you'll hear that side. And that side, of course, is U.S. Chamber of Commerce, big businesses, corporations. Those are the big lobbyists that are pushing and have the money to push, you know, to make their voice sound louder. But which is why we have to be sure to make sure that we do whatever we can to amplify our voices and put pressure on our representatives. And they have to hear from us more than any other lobbyist.
Beatrice Lopez with Public Citizen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
On July 26th, the Farnsworth Art Museum's Julia Gallery program for teens will again present the film Artworks at the Strand Theater in Rockland. It premiered in June. The stop-motion animation film uses objects and actors to portray the stories of Maine youth who have used art to help them navigate difficult periods in their lives. We spoke earlier with Roger Dell, the director of education at the Farnsworth Art Museum, about the museum's youth program and the Artworks project. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So tell us about Artworks, the film that's going to be shown again at the Strand Theater on July 26th, and the program at the Farnsworth that this and other pieces have been born out of.
Yes, we have a wonderful program at the Farnsworth called Julia's Gallery for Young Artists. It's a after-school teens arts program. And we have a separate building for it, which we call Julia's Gallery. And in this building, students come to a safe place to test out their creativity, imagination, and innovation. They get involved in putting on exhibitions, making art, acting as curators, designing installations, hanging shows, doing all sorts of things. So it's a wonderful opportunity for middle and high school students. And just recently, we started thinking more and more about what's called the new media film, which isn't so new, right? It goes back to the 1830s in Paris, but certainly film, and certainly digital film and photography. So it was last year that we started a program, and we decided to make a music video, and a local musician wrote a song called The Roaring Twenties, and it was based in part upon the historic Roaring Twenties in this country. And students worked with professional directors and photographers and mentor artists to create a short music video that's kind of like a Michael Jackson video, but not as expensive. And they did this great job, and they filmed the entire thing on a high-definition iPhone.
On the iPhone.
On the iPhone, the whole thing, from soup to nuts, on the iPhone. Did the editing and created this wonderful film. And then we had a documentary photographer doing a documentary about how the kids were making their film. So we showed both the film called The Roaring Twenties and the documentary about how it was made in November. And we had over 300 people in the Strand Theater for that.
And just to back up a little bit, about how many kids participate in this program and how long has it been going on?
It started in 2001, and literally hundreds of kids have participated in it. Typically, at any one time, it's 15-plus students involved in it. It's totally voluntary. There's no fees. And students typically come one day during the week after school, say like 3:30 on a Wednesday, and on Saturday when they don't have school. So it's an after-school arts
program. So it's free, so it's not cost-prohibitive. It's just driven if there's a young person who wants to explore these resources.
It's totally self-selected by the students if they're interested and they want to learn more. So, and one doesn't have to be in quotes. I'm holding up, you know, quotes with my fingers here.
Yes.
An artist. It's just for any student who might be interested in trying something different.
And Farnsworth is able to offer those resources and those connections to make these explorations a reality.
Yes, and it's only because we have wonderful funders who underwrite this program, so there's no cost to the students or their parents or their guardians. It's absolutely free. But it's a huge commitment for a kid to come after school during the workday and give up time to do that, and then also on a Saturday and You know, so many of the young people up here play sports throughout the season. So it's a huge commitment, which we really respect.
Well, let's talk about this film, Artworks.
Yeah.
And it premiered this June, but it'll be shown again at the Strand Theater on July 26th, is it?
Yes, at 5 p.m., and it's absolutely free, no reservations.
And sorry, so the Strand Theater's in Rockland, we should say.
Yes, in Rockland.
Tell us about this piece of work and what the students were hoping to express in it.
Well, the very same students who worked on the Roaring Twenties, plus or minus a few new students, worked on the Artworks video, which was entirely different. I mean, the Roaring Twenties was really a work of fiction. The Artworks is really a documentary, and it's a documentary about how the arts help kids at risk. Think about kids who are failing and thinking about dropping out of school, kids who are homeless. In point of fact, the arts are a solace for them. They find comfort in it. They find self-expression. So think about journaling, sketching, dancing, singing, or just going and listening to music or to a dance recital, something like that, is a way of finding solace and a way of also identifying oneself as a person interested in creativity. So we adults interviewed kids who were at risk and heard their stories, and every single one of them had a story that involved art. Hmm. So we went to the Julius Gallery students, a different group of students, and we said, here's this material. These kids are really finding a path through their difficulties with art. Would you care to make a documentary about that? And they said yes. So what they decided on was what we call a stop-motion animation. So think about claymation. Think about a Gumby figure that moves. Think about, we actually built a whole Lego town and moved the figures throughout the town. So it's simply still photographs that are shot 12 to every 1 second. And then speed it up, and it looks like these things are moving, but they're inanimate objects. And so the story that they told about kids at risk was done totally through stop-motion animation.
Are there actual interviews of the kids whose stories they were talking about, or it is all the start-stop?
There aren't interviews. You don't see those students, but you hear their voices telling their own stories.
Okay, yep.
I mean, because of privacy issues and identity issues, you know, we would not expose those young people to, you know, the huge screen of the Strand and have their faces there. Yeah. You know, we kept their identity secret.
And about how many stories are told in this piece?
There are about 7 or 8 different stories. Some of them kind of coalesce. I mean, there are similarities in the stories of young people, typically when kids are homeless. There's a tendency that they might drop out of school because it's so difficult to do homework and find a place to sleep at the same time. So some of the stories were a little bit conflated, and it's what might be called a docudrama more than a straight, standard, black-and-white, shaky camera, follow people through the streets documentary. It's much more a work of art, actually.
And the stories of these young people and how they incorporated art into their lives, was there a variation on whether they found they just created these opportunities themselves and just worked on art themselves, or did there seem to be programs that they were able to tap into?
Meredith, what's amazing is that often these kids were totally self-generated. They thought about what they wanted to do, and they just did it. They didn't take a class at the Farnsworth or at some art venue somewhere else. They just loved playing the harmonica or loved drawing, and they just did it. And they're so inspirational in how they understand that process and how they're able to talk about it that they're my heroes now, because they've gone through hard times and they've coped in ways that are really amazing to see. And art is that kind of social change can take place when art is present. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of strong art programs in our public schools, because in point of fact, that's where we see kids really blooming and finding their own identity, when they have a chance to do projects in the arts that, you know, they never even thought about until it was presented to them.
What do you think about the status of art programs right now in the state?
You know, we have some really good programs and some amazing teachers and amazing administrators. It's just we don't have the resources to deliver it in the way I would like to see it delivered, which is, you know, much more art taking place during the academic week and opportunities after school for kids to explore it further. I mean, I'm one of these people who believe that all kids are talented and creative and artistic, mm-hmm. and it's a matter of bringing resources to bear upon their situation, having adult supervision, and trusting that they're going to be able to make, you know, creative choices, and they do when they're given the opportunity. But if they're not exposed to it, we'll never know what kind of talent exists out there.
Anything else that you would like to add about this project in particular or about the Julia's Gallery program?
I think two things. One, this project in particular, which is this video called Artworks. It also has a documentary that shows our students working on this film and how it came into being. It's very interesting. So this day at the Strand on the 26th of July, it's Tuesday at 5 p.m., people will see both the Roaring Twenties and Artworks and two documentaries that tell about how these videos were made by students. So it's an hour filled with amazing creativity by our kids. And then lastly, the Farnsworth Education Program. Julia's Gallery is just one of the three pillars. We also have lectures and classes, and we also have what we call schools and teachers, guided tours and professional development for teachers. So actually next week we have a professional development opportunity for teachers. It's called the Lincoln Center Workshops, and we work with Lincoln Center in New York City to do a week-long workshop on aesthetic education. And that's already filled, so I'm saying it over the air now, but it's already been filled, and we have a wait list. So 40 teachers from around the country will be here for a week enjoying Maine, but also learning about aesthetic education.
And the Julia's Gallery projects will continue. I see on your website there were a number of other video projects, one to do with the bird's eye view, journeying through 21st century climate change, a number of different projects. And so these sort of projects continue. About how many a year?
We'll probably do two a year and do other things too. In other words, we'll still do painting and sculpture and drawing and ceramics and things like that. But right now we have a group of students who have now made two films. And so I always think that progressive mastery is an important thing. So you move these students forward. They made a fictional film, now they've made a documentary, and we'll decide next month exactly what they'll do in the fall. But I'm sure it'll be exciting.
Great. And if people want to find out more information about these projects or how they can get involved in this program, can you give that information?
Yes. I mean, the best thing to do is just to go to our website, www.farnsworthmuseum.org, and just check out the education programs there. And then there are various and sundry telephone numbers that people can call and find out more about it.
And again, the information about the July 26th showing.
Yes, that's going to be in the Strand Theater in beautiful downtown Rockland. Free, no reservations required. That's Tuesday, July 26th at 5 p.m. And I'm sure there'll be a good crowd there, so it'll be a lot of excitement.
Great. Roger Dell, Director of Education at the Farnsworth Art Museum in Rockland, thank you very much for joining us.
Meredith, thank you.
You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal produced by Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. You can listen to archives of this and other locally produced WERU programming at weru.org. You can contact us at news@weru.org.